everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being here. You are awesome. We love you to bits. I can't believe that we're still... Jesse, we had a quick look at the numbers the other night, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. My and them, some mighty big numbers. I don't know where that came from.
That was an amazing, amazing voice there. Mighty big.
Mighty big numbers.
Mighty big numbers. I still don't get it. I still don't get it. And we've still got people from all over the workplace just listening to our dodgy little show that is held together with gaffer tape and hope. That's pretty much it. Yeah. So for today's show, we have one of my buddies. I've known this guy far too long. He's a really clever businessman. Seriously, you won't believe the stuff this guy's got up to. And he's a stuntman in Hollywood films. Now, I knew him all the way back when we both worked at, and for the international members of the audience, I'm sorry you won't understand this, but we both worked at Butlins. We both worked at a holiday camp place over in Somerset, and I loved my time there. It was nuts. We were poor as anything, but it was great fun. It really was. So yeah, me and Tony met there and have known each other since and bumped into each other and have mutual friends that made us bump into each other even more. And now we play dodgy poker games together. It works. It works, right? Yeah, that works. So we're going to talk with Tony about business and how he works his business, how he's diversified his business, how he got to the position he's got to, and what on earth do you have to do to become a stuntman in the first place? And seriously, I loved his story about how he got through all of the training. It was awesome. Jesse, anything you need to say on this bit?
No, just enjoy, I think. I was surprised how much business information... When you told me who he was, I was like, wow, that's cool, because he's been in some seriously big films.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the point when I started...
You said, but how's this going to keep the business people happy? And it's like, nah, he has stories. It's
oh,
good.
Yeah, he does.
Right, in that case, ladies and gents, go listen to a possible advert if we've got one for this week. I don't know. And then listen to Tony talking about his stunt world and how he runs a business within it. See you later.
Newton's Nuggets.
Ladies and gents, thank you so much for listening to Newton's Nuggets. And to all of those people that have already been on Patreon, thank you, thank you, thank you. Seriously, the supporters of Patreon are helping us keep this show going and, you know, helping me pay the electric bills, which means I can still record the show. If you want to find our Patreon page, it's as easy as www.patreon.com/Newton's Nuggets. That's www.patreon.com/Newton's Nuggets. And there's some gifts on there. There's some presents on there. And some people get T-shirts. Thank you so much. And back to the show.
Newton's Nuggets.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you so much for coming back. And I've already warned you in the intro that I'm really excited about this one. This is actually one of my oldest entertainment buddies. I've known him for far too long. And he has probably far too many stories about me as well. But luckily, we're not here to do that. We're not here to go through Paul Newton's history, because that would be dodgy as hell. Today, we're going to be talking to my mate, Tony Christian, and we're going to be talking about him and his life in the stunt world, doing Hollywood films and doing Butlins stage shows. Ladies and gents, here's Tony. Tony, say hello, mate.
Hello, good evening.
Hey, mate, it's good to see you. Do you know what? I feel like I haven't seen you face-to-face for ages.
That's true.
We kind of kept some of the online poker games going, so we kept in touch.
Yeah, through Skype and various little social platforms, I suppose we managed to keep in touch.
Yeah, and it's weird. And that, but the bunch of lads that you arrange poker with all the time, it is nice for us to just get together and just act like kids, which we do far too well.
Yeah, totally. Far too often. Not often enough, actually.
No, it's not often enough, is it? And I just missed the last one because I had that stupid COVID thing. So sorry about that. Next time I'm there, I'll probably be buying the chocolate. Okay? <Yeah. laughs> Good. Good man. Right, Tony. Sorry, guys. I'm trying not to cough. Tony, the first question I ask everybody is, could you tell everyone who you are and why they should listen to me and you chatting on for about 30 minutes or so?
My name is Tony Christian. I am currently a professional stuntman, stunt coordinator, working in the stunt industry. So hopefully that's enough to entice people to want to listen, see if there's any decent stories and a little bit of entertainment for a Monday night.
Yay, good man. And you're, the thing is, I have trouble with this because I've been working in the entertainment world since I was a kid, okay? And I see stunt men as business owners and I see them as sole traders. And I know what literally hoops you guys have to jump through to even start in the stunt world. Mm. Now, me and you first met back in, I think it was about 99 when we worked in Butlins together.
That's right, the year before the millennium, yeah.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Because I can remember people saying, oh, you know, the end is near because the year 2000 is the end of it. Don't be silly. But yeah, 99, we both worked in Butlins. I was working as a stage manager for various shows around the place. And you were in like the pinnacle central venue for Butlins. You were in Reds.
No, but, I was in Skyline originally, which was...
You did Skyline down there. Sorry, I was picturing the right place and I called it the wrong thing. Yeah, you were in the Skyline, the big white tent in the middle of Butlins.
Yeah, we were classed as Shore Reds. So we didn't have any of the day-to-day of normal red coats, what people would see on red coats on TV or what they've heard about. We never had that, the general duties. So we were hired show reds, which was just the people who just did the shows. So just did the entertainment value. So they had like an afternoon show and then a nighttime evening show as well.
But your show, mate, it wasn't quiet. It wasn't easy. It wasn't an acting job. It was so physical. I used to come and work at your venue, I think it was one day or 2 days a week. And I was used to watch you and your team and just go, they're nuts. They are absolutely nuts. They're bouncing around all over the place and just using the whole space of the venue every single show you did. It was awesome, mate.
Yeah, I mean, that when we went for the audition for the first part, they wanted to introduce something completely new to Butlins. And it was just a mixed match of a lot of different people with different talents, so to speak. So they brought on a professional dancer or a couple of dancers and a good compere and a good magician. And they kind of put them all in one place. And then they just create this kaleidoscope of little mini shows almost where, you know, one time it'd be dancing, the next day it'd be singing, then it'd be a magic act. And they just introduced all these different characters into it. And I think the kids loved it. The kids loved it.
The kids and the parents loved it as well because they used to get a different show every single day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And actually, your MC, Mr. Murphy, I still rate him as one of the best MCs I know.
Yeah, he's been in the business a while. And Murph was actually the one who auditioned me for the part at Bowen's in my second recall.
No way, I didn't know that bit.
Yeah, and I spoke to him about wanting to be a stuntman. I was going through my training at the time and wanting to finish it. And he wanted to be a stuntman when he was a kid. And I think something happened to his eyesight, which had stopped him going for it. But he loved me because he knew what I wanted to do and my passion for it, I suppose. So he probably helped me get the job there.
But, mate, I just want to get this straight. You were at Butlins, working your backside off, probably 6 days a week now in Butlins, and you were still training to do your stunt registry then as well.
Yeah, so for the people that don't understand what's required on the register, in Britain, in the UK, we have a stunt register where people can join, if you will, under 6 qualifications. There can be anything from diving to swimming, parachuting, driving, horse riding, that sort of stuff. 6 disciplines to a very high standard. And at the time I was at Butlins, I was training 4 of those disciplines within the week. So I was traveling to Plymouth at 6 o'clock in the morning to do a one-to-one session with the great British coach. So that'd be an hour and a half in the pool off a 10-meter diving board. And then 2 days later, I'd be traveling up to Wigan and Woking to do my gymnastics part, and then Stockport to do fencing. And my martial arts was kind of national as well. So, yeah, I was traveling all over the country.
I have enough trouble keeping one show in my head when I'm doing a long run of shows. And you were in a show that changed on a daily basis, and you were doing 4 different disciplines for your stunt register as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, I've known this for a long time, mate, but you're nuts. You are absolutely nuts. I get
that a lot.
And the thing is, when you're training for the stunt register, you can't go out and work as a stuntman, but you have to keep paying out loads of money to do all this training.
Yeah, it costs an absolute fortune. I mean, just for the scuba discipline. Nowadays, it's not as bad because they have like courses you can go for 2 weeks to the Algarve or wherever it is and get your qualification, pay $3,000-$5,000 and get your qualification in those 2 weeks. And the structure's changed around the registered disciplines because it's to stop people doing that and crash course and everything. And that they should do it over a longer span of time.
Surely you want these people to know that information forevermore.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not about teaching and training to be a stuntman. It's just having that physicality and the discipline that comes from those disciplines to show they have that kind of follow through to go into stunt work.
The things that you just said you were going for had, to me, sounded like they had quite a big variety in there. Did you do that purposely to prove to the stunt register that you can do loads of different types of things?
Yeah, I think the way I thought about it was that if I had a wide range of skills, that would make me more employable. So there's a lot of guys that just do driving, just do horse riding stuff, and they are, channeled to just take those jobs, whereas I try to cover almost everything. I mean, the only thing I don't really do is horses.
Okay.
Because I believe that you need to be born into that and you need to do a lot. You need to come through that path for me. And I just didn't feel like I could give what I could, knowing what else I was doing at the time, you know.
Mate, I've got to agree with you because I my family owned horses from when I was a baby up until I was like late teenager. And there's just a something. The people who get horses, there's a something that is almost inbred in those people.
Yeah, I believe that as well. I mean, full respect to the guys, and I've got a lot of friends who are horse people and on the register as well, and they're amazing, amazing horse people, you know. Yeah. But it wasn't for me, really. I can fall off a horse pretty good and get dragged by one pretty good, but not for me.
And do you know what, right? This I alluded to a minute ago that we play poker every so often, and that's a lot of stuntmen friends that play with us as well.
Yeah.
And you know what? It scares the life out of me every time we meet up and you lot start talking about what you've done for a gig. And I'm like, Tony, you were being dragged at what speed by a horse that's how big? I'm thinking, no, mate, I just want to kind of pick you up, give you a cuddle and go, no, leave my mates alone. No, not happening.
Maybe afterwards, Paul, you know?
Afterwards, we can cuddle afterwards. Thanks, mate. It makes my mental health feel a lot better. Thank you. But then you've got, right, I've just said to you quite happily and quite publicly that I think you're nuts, okay? Which I do, just for the job you've chosen to do, you madman. And then on the flip side, you've got to be quite a focused and serious business owner. Because if you don't push this business, if you don't push yourself to be the best all the time, surely they're going to start giving the gigs you want to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a case of, As the progression of the stunt industry over the last 20 years has been phenomenal. In the last, probably since 2013, 2014, it exploded and the UK went mental. So, you know, you've now got Leavesden Studio, Shepperton and Pinewood have always been there, but they've expanded.
Yeah.
They've got studios popping up all over the place. We've got two coming to Reading, like major studios, Fox, Sky, they're all opening studio, Apple. You know, they're all doing it and they're all jumping on that little bandwagon where TV's gone mental as well with the streaming platforms and
This is it. Netflix just kind of kicked everyone in the backside and said, we're doing things different.
Yeah.
And yeah, you've got all of them producing their own films now that are going to stay exclusive to their streaming platforms.
That's right.
So they're all trying to get the best of the best people in.
Yeah.
And mate, I don't stalk my friends very often. Okay. But I've had a look at your IMDb, and we're not just talking a couple of little shows here, Tony. I mean, you've done from what Harry Potter films all the way to Wonder Woman and Aquaman and the Avengers. We're not talking, you know, you're working down at Reading Theatre, which is just, you know, down the road from you, and I go down there and I land on a crash mat every so often. We're talking, mate, you've got some amazing credits to your name.
Yeah, I've had an amazing career so far, and obviously appreciate all the work that's given to me, whatever it is. It can be
yeah.
budget, it can be main feature. I love my job. I absolutely love it, Paulie. I wouldn't do anything else. You know, I said, people say, well, what if you didn't do stunts, what would you have done? And I said, I'd have gone into the SAS. You know, that's the kind of mentality that I feel that I would have been happier with. So, you know, forces, high level forces, that stuff, if I hadn't done stunts. But I love it. I love the feeling that you get when you do a stunt, the feeling that the audience gives, the director gives, when he's like, gets so excited and worked up because you just suddenly do something, you know, almost unbelievable for the human body.
Yeah. And mate, there's something about you that I know I haven't said this to you personally, but I love the fact that you are always trying to push yourself. You always want to be the best of the best, but you're not a diva about it. You never walk around going, look at what I've done.
I don't believe there's any place for that in this industry. And I think that those people get pushed out, you know.
Mate, so do I. So do I. I think if you're an absolute idiot of a diva, if your career starts to decline, you see how many people will not help you up.
Yeah, that's
right. Because you've just trodden on too many people. But actually, do you know what? That's probably what makes the poker guys stay together, is none of those lot are idiots about it.
I think everybody in that group is humbling.
Yeah. Yeah. Really proud of everyone in that group, to be honest.
And knows where it could disappear very quickly.
Yeah. It's a weird career. We're all in. Yeah. You don't know. Someday someone might not like Trilby's anymore and I am screwed. It's going to happen. It's going to happen, mate. But okay, so what about when you're not working on a film, okay? Can we talk about the stunt stuff that you do for corporates and for festivals, things like that?
Yeah, so when I started out, I started doing stunt rigging as well when I wasn't getting as much performing because I'm short ass. I wasn't getting as much performing. I don't get to double.
Sorry, you can't say short ass and move on, okay? do you mind me asking, what height are you?
I'm only 5'3".
5'3". Okay, so that's why you double a lot of the kids' teenage stuff, don't you?
I do, but I'm also like 5'3" wide as well, so it's very difficult to... I'm very stocky, so for doubling kids, generally they're like, you're actually too big, you know, too thick. So
yeah.
I tend to get skipped out because of that, and skipped because I can't double Batman and James Bond and Aquaman. So I get... both ends of the stick pulled away from me and I have to try and get somewhere in the middle, which is why I went into stunt rigging and the creative side of it, because I felt like I can keep working in the industry and not have to worry so much about waiting for that phone call. Oh, we need you to double such and such a person. Very lucky on Potter, because I got
to
double the kids on that, but they grew up and they got taller. So, I couldn't carry on. Daniel had his own double, in fact two of his own doubles, which I couldn't compete with, and obviously the hair colour.
I double
Rupert for a couple of the films, he shot up very quickly, so I got pushed out for that, which I can't help, but the creative side led into me buying all my own equipment, and that led into me setting up my own stunt show, which I'd been out to America when I was a youngster and since Hollywood stunt shows out there, and I thought, I wonder if you could do a touring show where, you know, you can go to festivals and galas in the UK and just take it's a lot of work, but to take a stunt show. I know there's horse shows like arena shows, motorbikes, and I was like, I don't want to do any of those. I don't want to do cars, bikes and horses. So we set up scaffold towers, and we jump off them and fight each other and blow each other up, and it's the other side of the stunt world. Brought into a little mini show and display for the public.
And guys, I was lucky enough to get asked to MC one of these one day for Tony for a festival. And some of the things that they did, I mean, one of your guys, we had a kid come into the arena and pretend he was Iron Man. And one of your guys went running at this kid and he just had to do the Iron Man fist punch thing.
Yeah.
And then the stunt guy just flew backwards because he was rigged up on a big pulley, and he just flew backwards and flew into this crash mat. And this little kid just looked like he was the strongest thing in the world ever.
Yeah.
And you saw all of his mates at the gate just going, oh my word, that was amazing. And I was like, this is incredible.
Mm.
You're getting all of those kids and all of those parents as well going, wow, they're doing this right here in front of us without the Hollywood editing behind it. These guys are doing this live. Mate, it was epic. It was absolutely brilliant.
And a lot of the guys that do the show for me, I try and use stunt guys, but obviously you can imagine the pay is not all that great because it's a live show and they don't have the budget that big feature films do. So I try and use trainee guys and give them experience of live performance because I feel it helped me with my performance. I try and use stunt guys all the time as much as possible. And I think that the audience participation, part of the show is very important because it brings them into our world.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, and I can remember that kid getting picked out and it was spot on because he was the kid that was a little bit shy, but could see that he really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I knelt down with him and I said, look, these are the moves we're going to do and you are going to have to, and we're going to power through this. And your guy just came running at us at the right time. And I just went, punch him now. And this kid just went, okay, like that. And the stunt guy just flew backwards. It was just beautiful. The timing of your guys on that show was amazing. And I don't know, because I know you changed the show around a lot. But in the show, you and some of the guys did like a police chase against a bad guy who had a gun. And it was so awesome just watching you and the people you work with really well chasing one guy and he was shooting some of you off of the scaff bar and you're all landing in crash mats, getting back up, going after him again. You could see the crowd. Well, to be honest with you, I forgot about watching the crowd after about a minute because I was like, this is awesome. I'm so watching this. But seriously, mate, you got all of them interested in entertainment in a way that I've not seen anyone else in England been able to do that.
Mm. Yeah, I think that... with your DVDs now and even your streaming programs, you have the behind the scenes stuff. YouTube's gone mental as well, isn't it? And everybody wants to see it's becoming more apparent that actors don't do all their own stunts as much as they claim to. And I think now the public are getting wise to that. And there's a massive fight there's still no Oscar for stunt people. Still no BAFTA for stunt people, which I think is not right. And that's my opinion. They want to keep it hidden. They want to keep that world secret. And I'm like, I think you've gone past that point now. You know, we're in 2023 now. I think people know what happens in the movies. You know, I don't think stars need to go, yeah, I do my stunts, get away, stunt the ball. You know, I think that's gone.
This is it. And I know we've got some of the celebrities who do some of their own stunts. But then it's all the other guys that they're fighting with. We all know they're stunt actors.
Well, I use Tom Cruise as an example.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, Tom Cruise is always on stunts. He does, you're absolutely right. But he has a stunt double who does all those stunts first before he does to make sure that he's not going to get hurt.
Right? Yep.
And that's a lot for a lot of the big players, you know, a lot of the big A-list players, the same thing. And some of them are like, I don't do stunts. My double does stunts. That's why he's here. You know, I've just been on Aquaman 2. And Kim Fardy, who's Jason's double, Jason Momoa, Jason's like, nope, that's not me. I've got my stunt double. Bring him in. And Kim steps in and does the job, and he's a spitting image of him. So why not?
Why not? Exactly, why not? I mean, at the end of the day, that actor is there to look like the character, to be like the character, to think like the character, to say the words that the scriptwriter gives them and do the direction that the director wants them to do. Can you imagine if on top of that, you've then got to learn how to sword fight with expert sword fighters?
Mm.
How about we just put a stuntman in there and let the expert in sword fighting do a great sword fighting scene? Might work.
I think that because they've limited the time that films are done now, so where it used to be 9-12 months of film and it's now trying to cram everything into 5-6 months because they want that turnover, they're having to the location work that happens as well as the studio work. They can't be in one place, all the places at one time. So they have to have. Now we have a couple of doubles where one's doing second unit, one's doing the main unit action while the main actor's doing his dialogue stuff. You've got to get that much film within that short period of time.
Mate, I hadn't thought of it that way. They're trying to do like 2-3 locations at once.
Yeah, I mean, again, the actors want to be seen by their fans that they are doing their own stuff. And so, you know, that's fair enough. But I think the public has switched on enough now to know how the system works now, I think.
But this is it. I don't understand how at the end of the film you can have the stunts team, you can have the double, their name is on the credits.
Mm.
If it's not hidden, is it, really?
No.
Surely it's time to go, look, out of these five films, these stunt performers were the five best in five separate films. Let's give one of them an award for doing something that is just edge of the seat stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we have our Taurus Awards, which are American based, and they are sponsored by Red Bull, and they're a stunt award for stunt people. And that's why they feel that, oh, you have your awards, you know, that your peers give you your awards, you're voted for by your peers. But I think there's something missing from the Oscars, where costume get one, makeup get one, special effects get one. What, you know, why don't stunts get one? And it's the same for the BAFTAs.
Right. And everyone that listens to the show knows that Jesse sometimes sends me notes in case he thinks I might have missed something or something that will help me. Okay. He's just put on, now you've just mentioned special effects. Okay. If you're going to keep anything hidden, surely it's the special effects that are going on. And Jesse, just before you said that, sent me a note saying, next thing you'll be saying that Thor's hammer isn't real. It's like, exactly. People know. Come on.
Yeah. He really flies and he shoots lightning and stuff. He's real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Don't burst a bubble.
Mate, this is something that really does get my goat, because I see this stuff that you guys are doing and when you're talking about, and the risks you lot take, okay? Because we both know some people that have taken risks for films and it's come off badly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's people who have life changed and the injuries, you know.
Yep. Yep. And you look at those people and you go, they were doing it for the love of the work they do. And then you've still got people going, no, we're not going to put an award into the Oscars. I don't get it. And don't anyone take this out on Tony. This is my strop on this one, because it winds me up something chronic. How can you have an award for, like you said, special effects team, and not have an award for, I don't know, the best stunt coordinator?
Mm. Yeah, the thing is, you watch an action trailer for an action movie, I would say that 75% of that trailer is made up of the stunts or the action, right? Because it's selling an action movie.
Yeah.
You don't watch an action trailer and just score, that was amazing dialogue, I'm going to go and see that movie.
Oh, the script in that action film, I'm going to go watch it for that.
The lighting was...
And did you say the way he showed emotion in that? Oh, my word.
I'm definitely going to see that one. Twice.
No. If you're going for it's a bad example, Fast and Furious. Right. If you're going to see a Fast and Furious film and the trailer does not have some car action in it,
yeah,
what the hell? you'd just be like, what's going on? That's not right. Okay. Sorry. Now, the corporate side, we just said about you did festivals and you do corporates as well. So when you're setting up for those, is there anything that you worry about? Is there anything you need? I remember the one that I did. Your team were there really early. And once they got their space, it was like they just took over. Is there any situations you can't put that show on?
So we don't do, where most of the car horse shows are arena acts. So they will take their show into an arena and then they'll come out and somebody else will go in and do their show and they'll come out and then the hawk guy comes in and he does his bird show. We can't do that because we have to be static.
Oh, so, yeah, because you have to have your stuff set up.
Yeah, so we have to have our own mini arena, if you will, so we can have our towers planted and everything set out and our control tent. It's all, you know, part of that, the audio system. It's made to shock people. Whereas you just have your tannoys around your that are really squeaky, you know, and you just hear the voices. You're like, what did he say? I wanted something that would just blow the people away and go, oh my God, this show is unreal. You know, on a live event, it's very difficult. It was very difficult. And that's why the creative side of the show came into effect, where I wanted to do jerk backs and, you know, somersaults and trumpet work and the fight work and the fire burns. And
Hold on. Jerk back.
So that's what you were talking about with the Iron Man.
Yes.
So he's on a wire and he gets pulled back.
Yeah. It's literally whenever you see somebody in a film that suddenly flies backwards with an extreme force, that's what the stunt guys call a jerkback.
Yeah.
It's all right. I needed to stop you on that one because the first time that you ever said that to me, I was like, what the hell's a jerkback? I don't understand. And then you explained it. I was like, okay, cool. So you can't do arena tours with other people?
Not really. It has to be a much more scaled down show. They give you a 15 to 20 minute window generally to get into the arena and then to get out. So, you know, I looked into having a truck with the tower on it and drive it in and drive it out, but it was going to cost so much money. And because they don't pay that well, it seemed a little bit fruitless.
Yeah, and even then, compared to the stability of the rig you guys currently have, that it's good. It is really good. Tony, this might surprise you, okay? On the day that I helped you with that show, because you were elsewhere early morning and you came along midway through, you won't have seen this bit, mate. But your stunt guys, they didn't want to trust me for rigging up the whole everything that they were working on. I mean, I was there going, go on, let me help, lads. Let me help. And they looked at me and went, will you put up the tent that we can all sit in for some shade? That's all you're allowed to touch, Paul. I was like,
boy, that's it.
Oh, now I'm a little bit concerned, Tony, because only one of them there knew me. Now, you've known me for a long time and you've known me in theatres and stage and stuff like that. Did you send them a message saying, do not let Paul rig anything?
No, the problem with the show is that it's quite heavy work in the sense of, because the scaffolding has got up a certain way. These boys have done it before. So not to be rude, but you might have got in the way and just made that process longer. So that's
what mate, you are spot on. And do you know what? And I did walk away and I put up the little marquee thing that was basically the tent for the sound kit and for everyone to sit in when they could. And it was so funny, mate. I turned around to look at the scaff tower and they were already half built by the time I'm literally lifting this marquee out of its bag. And I was like, okay, yeah, they're really good. They know what they're doing. They've worked as a team before. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you can see them hanging off of bits and just going, ding, 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 ding. And I was like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not helping with that now. I'm all right. I think they let me pull a crash mat out of a van. And that might have been it.
Shouldn't let you do that.
So do you know what? They probably just let me pull it out of the van and then they went, that's it, Paul. Now let go. Go back to your little marquee and sit there. Okay, all right, on it. No, they were really good. And there were some really good people on that. So you've gone from, in this talk already, right, we've gone from Tony that I met at Butlin's as a show red to Tony who's doing big Hollywood films. How did you handle that as a business owner? Are you still sole trader? Is it a full company you've got now?
Sorry. When I started out, I was a sole trader. I went from Butlin's in 99. I got a gig at Legoland, doing the stunt show at Legoland.
Oh, my word, I forgot Legoland.
I did that for on and off for 5 or 6 seasons.
And the jet ski races around the lighthouse.
Yeah. So I did that.
Hold on, this is just for Jesse. Jesse, that was another place that they went, Paul, you're not allowed to touch these things. The jet ski was one of them.
Yeah, well, even the stunt guys crashed the jet ski poorly. So one guy actually took. So the reset at the end of the day is to park the jet ski on its ramp, which is at the other end of the water behind the lighthouse. For those that know, well, there's a cafe behind the restaurant behind the jet ski mount. So one day, guy approached it, and I wasn't there, but I heard about it, and he's approached it at quite a bit of speed, and there's no stopper on this ski ramp. It's just you just bang it up, and once it's out of the water, it's safe and good. But he gunned it and shot it off the end of the ramp into the restaurant, and luckily there was no people there because it was the opening warm-up, so there's nobody there. But so don't worry.
Can you imagine if you were sat in there having a nice cup of tea and a day out with your family,
the show as well?
Jeez.
Yeah, a little bit audience participation, a little bit too far.
Yeah, a little bit too much. There's suddenly a stuntman on a jet ski drinking tea with you. Afternoon, how are you doing? Lovely. mate, I'd forgotten Legoland completely. And because I got shown around Legoland by Matt as well.
Oh, really?
And saw you there. And, oh, my word, Ian worked there for a while as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Ian did, yeah.
Mate, that was funny times.
Really. Through Legoland that are now stunt on the register.
But even, from what I remember of that, the water, because they were doing high dives off of the top of that lighthouse.
That's right, yeah. It's about nine and a half metres platform. And the water is only 12 foot deep, so three and a half metres.
See, right, I'm not a diver. You may have guessed from my physique, I'm not a swimmer or a diver. The maths on that does not sound good, Tony.
So they wouldn't allow you to go hands first. So you were not allowed to dive in. And this was even accomplished divers. And they had some very high level divers there who were Olympic divers who could dive in hands first and knew the process. And I was I was one of those people who knew how to dive hands first, but they wouldn't let it happen. So they just said, no, hands first dives. It's always got to be feet first. And the reason for that was because at one end of where the audience is sat, the water's only a foot deep and it sort of crevices down until this 12 foot cavern. And then it drops for about another 3 meters. But most of the guys, when they jump off something, they jump out from the tower.
Yeah.
So they end up traveling quite a distance. So they always ended up on that 12 foot raking up shelf.
And not using the extra depth. Using
the extra depth. So you had to be very close to the lighthouse to get in that depth of water. So most of the guys would jump in feet first and hit the bottom and push up from the bottom to get back to the surface.
Mate, even that for a Legoland live show, that sounds scary as.
Like it's the best part of the show because that's what the kids want to see.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to see somebody dancing on the dock side. They want to see somebody jumping off the lighthouse, and that's what they come to see. So, you know, on the first couple of years I was there, we worked into the show that at the end, the diving sequence should be bigger and better than the little dancey numbers that they were doing at the start of the show, because that's what they want to see. They want to see more of that.
Yeah, you end it on an absolute high. Those kids will talk about it for years.
Yeah, but then you get the one end of the scale to the other where that you've only got five performers who were doing dives, and only four of them usually dive off. The hero goes at the end. But getting up the tower and jumping off and then getting up the tower and jumping off and getting up, it takes a while. So, you know, and when it's in cold water as well, because we used to rehearse from February, March, and sometimes the water was frozen. So you'd have to break the water.
No way.
To do rehearsals.
That sounds hurty. And ladies and gents, that's why I'm a magician. Okay? I'm not doing that. Anything that sounds too hurty for me, no. Mate, that's awesome. Right, so sorry, you started out as a sole trader.
Yes, yeah, so I continued that through. So through all the days of work I got as a stunt person, my first gig wasn't until 2001. Which is only a couple of days, and back in the early 2000s, there weren't a lot of work around. A lot of TV stuff and a couple of films, but if you weren't with a particular team, you didn't get employed. So I just stayed as a sole trader because I was only getting little bits and pieces. My first feature was the second Harry Potter film, which I was very lucky to get onto. I've stayed as a sole trader all the way through, and then last year I decided to set up a company. And that launched sort of end of last year, this year. So now I'm trading as both a sole trader, but have a company that I'm now going to branch into and start working through.
Nice. A lot Very of nice.
Do have companies and have set up companies when they started stunting, just because that's how they want to work.
Well, this is it. It's however they want to set up their accounts and whatever works out better for them personally, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And do you know, your driving stuff as well. You've hardly mentioned any driving gigs. And I know you're one of the best drivers that I know.
Well, maybe that you know, but not one of the best drivers on the register. So again, I think it comes down to a height thing for a lot of people. It's not sometimes your ability. It's just production's luck. And they'll put forward 20 guys and they'll pick 10 guys that like the look of, or 10 guys that meet the height criteria, even though they're driving a car. It doesn't really matter, but again, it's the same thing with almost with doubling. I've doubled a 6'2" guy, because I'm the only person in the scene. So there's no reference for anybody to go, oh, he's not 6 foot two.
So it's not like you're standing next to a post box that has a height marker on it.
No, or another actor. You know, if you're standing next to an actor, obviously it's obvious that you're not quite tall enough or how tall they want you to be or need you to be, which is where I can't really do a utility job as a stunt person and just go in and do bit parts and do reactions with actors and fights because I just don't hit that criteria for them.
Fair enough. And then also know you're doing more and more coordinator stuff now.
Yeah, well, the way this register works now it's got better is there's a five-tiered platform. So you start off as a probationer, learning your craft. You just go in and do your job, get your ticket signed off, get paid. And you work your way through and the fifth level is full coordinator. So you can employ people to do stunts on features and TV stuff.
Mate, that's brilliant. Was there a noticeable difference for you going from being one of the guys that are doing the job to being the coordinator in charge of those guys?
So I still perform. I'll always perform. It's the number one thing. If somebody said to me, would you coordinate over performing? No, not at the moment. I would still perform and I still will until I can't. But coordinating is something that then I can go into or go on to once I'm not able to perform myself. But I've need to set those seeds up now because if I wait and wait and wait and then just suddenly break from performing and have no links into coordinating, I'm not going to be able to create them. So
It's like back when you started your career as a stunt performer, you were proving yourself and proving yourself and proving yourself, and then you got taken seriously by some of the bigger production. You're doing the same thing with the coordinator.
Yeah, that's right. And unfortunately, nowadays, it's still the same as it was back then, where if you're a family member or related, generally they get preference. And people that get employed as utility guys who are with the coordinator for the full core run of a film will get chosen over people like me who only might come in for a couple of days or a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know? So it's been very difficult to transition through to and get pick up them coordinating gigs. Because, you know, a lot of the old school guys from the 80s and 90s have their producer people and friends that they get their jobs from. I don't have that. It was much more difficult to get that post 2000, you know.
Yeah.
I'm working at it. But I'm still waiting for the big one, Paulie.
Mate, it'll come. You know? There's certain people that I know that are working their backsides off and are really, really brilliant people. I seriously think it will come, mate. Some of the stuff you're doing, I get so excited when I see friends' names on films. And we play Spot Paul's mate, to be honest with you. And I still find it funny as. What about special effects? Do you think that's going to help stunts or is it making it unbelievable?
In America, I've worked with a few American guys in the last couple of jobs, and the way their system works is that special effects and stunts work together. So that sometimes you have stunts who do special effects.
Nice.
Over in the States. But in this country, they are two different departments. They're under two different... the register and special effects were under the same umbrella, but they had different union parts that made up and sort of went through their criteria of upgrading or getting jobs, etc. We've broken away from that union a little bit now, and we're kind of set up on our own. We're kind of our own entity, and special effects are still with their branch, which I know they were talking about breaking away, but I don't think it's happened yet. So there's no intermingling of stunts and special effects in this country. They are separate.
Wow. With how good the British film industry is, imagine what they'll do if they start working together better.
I mean, they do work together in the sense of alongside each other, you know, with...
nice, okay.
But they don't... Stunts don't do special effects and special effects don't do stunts. You know, they are two separates, but they do work together.
Gotcha.
Confusing as that sounds.
Yeah, that does sound confusing. It sounds so confusing. I'm going to stop asking about it in case I ask the wrong thing, because that's going to annoy me now. I'm going to listen back to this and go, shut up, or stop it. Right, my last question, and I warned you about this question, okay? This podcast started out being called Newton's Nuggets because it was literally me just pointing a camera at myself and trying to give a nugget of information to help people. Mm-hmm. And then weirdly, it turned into the show where I started interviewing people when the first lockdown happened, purely to stop me going nuts. And now it's got a shed load of followers and people that seem to like it. So we're going to keep going as much as we can.
Good work, Brody.
Tony, would you please give me your nugget, and we can call that your Newton's nugget of information for this week?
I would have said to the listeners, try and make sure you have no regrets in life.
Oh.
And not just in your business life, but in all your life. Life's too short, Paula, you know that. And you know, I've lost friends this last few years through coronavirus and bits and pieces, like everyone else probably has. Yes. And it hurts. No regrets, mate. Don't have any big regrets.
We do not know what's happening tomorrow to any of us.
Yeah.
And you know what? You've hit on something that I've lived my life by for the last 20 odd years. I try to have a life of least regrets. You're going to screw up every so often, and it'll annoy you. But do you know what? When I'm going to make a big choice, I literally say to myself, right, when I'm 90 years old and I'm sat in that rocking chair, which option would I regret the least?
Yeah.
And it does sort your head out so quick.
Yeah, I mean, you make mistakes. It makes us human. But I do feel like that should be a mantra almost for people, is just start having regrets, you know, whether you make bad mistakes or good ones.
Yeah, me and you we've both made some stupid mistakes. And the funny thing is, you then meet up with certain friends to play poker, they'll rip into you for it and move on.
Exactly, yeah.
It really is what it is. Mate, thank you so much for taking time out to come and do this. I know you're a busy boy. I know you've got a lovely little family you want to spend time with. Seriously, I cannot say how much I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much, Tony.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, Paulie.
Mate, do you want to say goodbye to everyone listening?
Yep, thanks, guys. Stay safe. And I wish you well for the next year. Hope everybody stays healthy and safe.
Mate, I can't wait to see you in your next film. Ladies and gents, that is Mr. Tony Christian. We're now going to go to a quick advert break, and then it will be to me and Jesse talking about Tony behind his back, and he won't get to hear any of it until the show goes out. Ladies and gents, we'll see you in a minute.
Newton's Nuggets.
Hi, this advert is a shout-out to MyVIP Rewards. Maddie, who's a former guest and a guest this month on the show, has told us about an amazing offer for businesses who do business with other businesses. This VIP package offers loads of rewards and options and opportunities in it. Not only do you get my VIP reward membership, but you also get social posting, newsletter promotion, featured blogs, and monthly networking. And all of this is available till the end of January 2022 for the amazing price of just £8.99 per month. Or you can go for an annual package, which is £89.99. Maddie doesn't actually know that we're doing this advert, so she's not checking it. So what you want to do is check to see if I've got anything wrong, including that incredible price, by going to myviprewards.co.uk and clicking on that subscribe button. It'll give you all the details, and then you can have a look and see if you want to subscribe, which at that price, you probably do.
Newton's Nuggets.
And welcome back. See, I told you he had some stories, didn't I? That was Tony Christian. I mean, go and look at his IMDb page. It's awesome. Now, I know we had Matt Sterling on, my word, nearly 2 years ago now.
Yes, nearly 2 years.
Oh, my word.
When did that happen?
Oh, my word, mate. That was just a wet slap in the face with a kipper then. We've been going nearly 2 years. We're coming up to episode 100, Jesse. I don't get it. So, we told you we had some stories. We know we've already had a stuntman on before, but seriously, his work ethic for working at Butlin's on the time off going out and training and proving his value in doing all these ridiculous sports and stunts that he's got into, to get onto a stunt register that then doesn't actually promise you're going to get work. You still have to prove you're as good as or better than other people to get the gigs after that.
Yeah.
And then, not only that, so he's now a stuntman, he's getting into the jobs, he's getting the work done, and then he goes, you know what, in the time that I'm not working, why don't I start up a business that does stunts live for people? What the hell? Mate, I think that at some point when he decided to get into stunt, he put a firework up his backside on productivity. And he hasn't actually got rid of it yet.
No, he seems like he's making sure he's diversified enough.
Yeah.
But also, when he's not doing that, he's also thinking about how he's going to extend his longevity. And you see that a lot in people who are in what I'd class as shorter careers, like sports people and things like that. But it's interesting how many people don't think about that when they're running, like, what I'd call a more traditional business.
Yeah.
But actually, the reality is a lot of products and a lot of routes to market and things like that, especially people who have started up a business in the last 2 or 3 years, perhaps, the way that you're being successful now is probably not the way that you will manage to keep staying successful in 5 or 10 years' time. And so making sure that you are... I heard somebody talking about this recently, about making sure you take time to step away from the business of the day-to-day to make sure you can think about the future, what you're going to be doing in the future, is really important. And it's, you know, Tony is... made it really clear about how he's having to do that, but
yeah,
that's because he knows the route of where he's going. But actually, when you're in business, you don't always know what's coming up, so actually making sure you're prepared is almost even more important.
And you know, I had a bit of a we've talked about this, I don't know if I've said this on the show, but I had a bit of a wake up moment a while back. Because my dad has problems with his knuckles, and we think it's arthritis, but he's my dad, so he's not going to the doctor to find out. And my brother's getting it as well, and he's an electrician and he works in maintenance. So if he's using screwdrivers and stuff for too long, his knuckles are bad. So possibly arthritis. And then I thought, hold on, what if I get that and I'm trying to do close up magic all the time? And it does make you think. How long can I do this thing that I love doing? And if I suddenly can't for any reason, what do I do next?
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the plan was to start a podcast.
Oh, it was planned. Can I see that plan somewhere, please, Paul?
Hold on. I got this. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm just
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul is now going to write 3 bullet points. 2 of them will be start podcast and get rich.
I'm not as detailed as you. I just went for start podcast.
Okay. 3 bullet points. Start a podcast.
That's it.
That's for the listeners.
What business
with,
plan.
What with everybody listening rather than watching and you holding up the picture to
and
the
do
camera.
Do you know what? I'm going to treat it like a to-do list and do a big tick because now I feel good about myself too.
You sound like you've been doing an awful lot of online training courses with people that no one's ever heard of.
What else did we talk about? We did talk about something else that is rife with my friends in the entertainment world is don't be a diva. Just don't. Just really don't. Okay? Yeah. It's not worth it. There's enough of them already.
It's funny, isn't it? I've made the joke about people that no one's ever heard of, but you do get an awful lot of people who you think, I don't really understand where you even think that you've got the right to be a diva from.
Mate, I did. What was it? A festival a little while ago that I was the MC host for. And this girl came on to sing and acted like she was the big I Am. And you know, she's backstage getting herself all ready. And mate, it was just beautiful. It was just beautiful because she's gone, right, when am I on? How long have I got? And this crew member just looked at her and went, who are you? I was like, oh, I better listen. Awesome, thanks. It was brilliant. Yeah, that was a bit of a wake up call for her. But
yeah.
And then you see other people, actually, same festival. I remember taking a picture of this girl that was singing and her band, pinging it to you and going, these guys are amazing. And you ping back, I've worked with them. They are amazing. I was like, brilliant. And you said it then as well. Yeah, they're great to work with. They're really good laugh. They really know their stuff. They'll nail everything. And they'll say thank you at the end. And they did. They really did. I turned around to them and said, that was amazing. That was absolutely brilliant. You had all the crowd with you. And she went, thank you so much. Because, you know, it's hard to gauge this, this, and this in the current climate where people have to be spaced out so much. But yeah, they were awesome. It's
funny because of the live music photography I do and knowing a lot of people in the music scene in the local area.
Yeah.
I get to see a lot of backstage stuff. And first of all, anybody who wants to be a singer, X Factor aside, if anybody thinks that becoming a professional singer is glamorous, you are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm talking about, you know, Ed Sheeran used to sing at the venue that I do a lot of my photography at. He really did not have a glamorous time for the first 6 or 7 years of his career.
Yeah.
You know, he was playing the sticky floored 200 cap venues and things like that. He got to where he is because he was nice to people and he got on with people and he worked really hard. Those are the two things. You work really hard and you're nice to people. You might get lucky.
Yeah.
And that's true of any business. But it's amazing how the number of divas you see, and not just the singers. I mean, I see all sorts. I've had promoters working for a band who have been extremely rude, which I've then giggled to myself about them, but sorry for the band, because I've had promoters that have been extremely rude to me and other members of staff, and then 10 people turn up to the gig. In fact, I think it was less for one in particular that I can remember. I think there were about 5 people there and me photographing it, and it was just
Do you know what? If maybe that's the nugget. It's not Tony's nugget, by the way. We know what Tony's nugget is, but don't be a diva. It's just not worth it.
No.
And in the speaking world, the more I go into that,
people are so surprised when you're so nice.
They are, aren't they? They are. I do this weird thing of saying thank you to people. And I get a confused reaction. What is that all about, Jesse? I don't get it. Anyway, I find if I'm nice to people, I get rebooked and I get the nice treatment again. It's really weird, huh?
Wait. You're saying that if you're nice to people, they're nice back.
I know, right? Who'd have thunk it?
And talking of nice people, it's that time.
No. I got other bits because there's a question I want to ask you, and then we can go to that.
I had a lovely segue. Go on, get your bits out, Mr. Nuggets.
Mate, we called the show Newton's Nuggets. We're going to get away with that gag for years. Okay. The question I want to ask you is, Jesse, can you think of any decent reason that there is not an Oscar for a stuntman, stuntwoman, or a stunt crew, or a stunt coordinator?
No. Not considering all of the other Oscars there are. But I think that generally speaking, when you see how big the list of people involved in a film in the credits is in general, it doesn't surprise me that there isn't one for stunt people.
I think it's nuts. When you look at the quality of films that are out there, okay, and how many of them rely on the stunt team to be amazing. And then, you know, you've got an Oscar for, and this is made up, by the way, this is completely wrong, I haven't checked this, but you'll have an Oscar for the second lipstick holder of the third makeup assistant. And you're like, what? Why? Why? And there's nothing on the stunt team.
So there's an Academy Award for the best visual effects.
Yeah.
Because everybody loves a bit of CGI.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I think that might even be a new award.
I just, back in the days when they were trying to hide the fact that the stuntmen were coming in and doing stuff, I could make an argument for it, maybe. But now, you know, actually, do you know what? To all of the big film producers and makers and directors, we know there's a stunt team.
There, but I would add to that, if you've got people, if you've got awards that you're nominated for best special effects and stunt teams and that, take these people to the award ceremony and let them go and take the award.
Yeah.
Because you always see the same people going and picking up the awards. It's always like the same director or whatever giving their... Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Here's another Oscar. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That the team were amazing. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Do you know what?
It's one of the things in motorsport that happens is when the team, because you get a trophy for the top three drivers and then you get a team person that goes up for the winning team. And you will normally see somebody who is not the team boss go and get that. And they'll have a different person every week or every race weekend.
Nice. I like that. So there is a good chance that everybody involved gets involved. I like that. Okay. I'm going to try and give you your segue back now. I'm going to try and remember roughly what I said earlier.
you could just say, okay, right, that's the end of that and go on to the next.
I've got this. And out of all the stunt people I've ever met, all of the ones that I've ever met have been really nice people.
Talking of nice people, Paul. Yay! Can anybody tell that we don't script this?
We don't.
I use the S word. I should not use the S word in front of Paul.
Nearly
take
lost
a deep breath.
Right, so talking of nice people.
Talking Jesse. Of nice people. It's time for the Nuggeteer of the Week. And and if somebody wants to come up with a jingle for that, rather than
we haven't got time.
Making it up, we haven't got time. So please feel free. And then that might go towards being a Nuggeteer of the Week. You never know.
Yeah, mate, there's only two people that listen, and we've now done... This is going to be our second Nuggeteer, so I'm not sure. But, right, okay, so Nuggeteer of the Week is a Mr. Rob... Oh, we've been arguing about how to say his last name, haven't we?
No, you've been arguing. I'm perfectly confident.
You're perfectly... You say it then. Go on. I don't mind.
So this week, the Nuggeteer, actually chosen by Paul, is Mr. Rob Witham.
Rob, okay. He sent us those notebooks ages ago when he didn't have to, and they are just awesome. And in the last couple of weeks, he sent me an email that was lovely. It was really, really nice. And this is why he's got Nuggeteer of the Week. Rob, your message about Jesse's solo show was brilliant, mate. It was brilliant. Rob said in his email that, you know what, I love the solo show. Jesse did really well on it. And if Jesse had his own show, he would subscribe. So, Rob, thank you very much for reminding us about Jesse's solo show, episode 84, December 15th, 2021.
You know I have access to delete that episode. Just saying.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. But then we'd lose all of our two downloads because, you know, those two followers, right? Mate, it messes with my head. It really does. And Rob, thank you very much, mate. We're going to send you a little present in the post as soon as we steal your address from somewhere. Ooh.
Are we going to tell everybody about the present, actually?
Oh, you talk while I get one out.
So for those of you on watching on the screen, I'm going to hold this up and my camera's not going to focus on it. So nobody's going to see it. But if you go to our social media sometime about now, you'll be able to see that we have... Ah, there we go. We have two very, very nice badge designs that say, that have our logo and say official Nuggeteer on them. And so we have Nuggets blue, greeny blue, and Nuggets purple. So we are going to be sending out badges to everyone who gets a Nuggeteer of the Week. And if you can't be bothered to send us any messages, then you can always go and sign up to our Patreon, and all patrons will be getting a badge.
Yeah!
Including patrons that were supposed to get one ages ago, and we've now got them, so because it's taken us a little while to get it sorted.
And I was ridiculously excited when they appeared.
He was so excited, he drove to my house to throw them at me.
Yeah, dude. Ladies and gents, thank you so much. Right, and just to end the show for today, I'm going to go back to Tony Christian, whose nugget for this week was, have no regrets. I completely agree. Even in the interview, I said I kind of have a rule of live a life of least regrets. I don't want to be sat on a rocking chair on a porch somewhere when I'm 95 years old, whinging about the things that I didn't do or I could have done. Everyone, if you're listening to this, just try and live by no regrets. It's awesome. It is awesome. Jesse, anything you want to do before we finish the show?
I'm just going to say goodbye, everyone.
Ah, you're lovely, you are. Awesome. Bye, Jesse. Bye, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Mutants Madness.